90.3.
This is Near FM.
Now, I am delighted to be joined on the line by Leah Russell from the Early Years Programme, and she's the coordinator with that said programme and the Preparing for Life team at the Northside Partnership. Leah, lovely to talk to you again. How are you?
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I am grand. Thank you so much. Leah, the National Child Care Scheme, there is, and I have sight of a letter which was sent, and it does not make for comfortable reading, because basically it would appear that the National Child Care Scheme is going to disadvantage parents who are not working. Explain,
please. That's right.
Please.
Yeah, so, I mean, primarily where we kind of start from is really, even in the title, it's called childcare. And I suppose everybody who would work in early years education knows that we're not simply just minding children, we're not caring for children, we are providing, you know, education to small children. But really, where we're coming from in the Northside area, we have, in PFL here, I support, work with a lot of the early years, community-based early year services in the area. And what we do is, like, we're providing early education and interventions for young children. So we know that this area in particular is one of the most disadvantaged in the country. And what we know through early years education is that we can really break that cycle and, you know, work with young children to provide a safe space for them to learn. You're really kind of creating the foundations of their future career in education, and that it's really essential for children to be able to engage in that. But what's happening with the National Child Care Scheme really was designed for parents. You know, we've seen a lot in the news over the years around kind of parents complaining about childcare fees, and rightly so, it's very expensive. But they would be families, obviously, who have two parents who are working, you know, full-time and, you know, will be earning a fairly decent income. So what the childcare scheme is really around supporting families like that. It kind of gives them, you know, a certain amount of money off their childcare fees, and that money comes directly into services. But what we're looking at in the community-based service, all that we would have previously had lots of different funding streams depending on the parents and family situation. So we might have, you know, a young mum who is doing her leave insert and has had a baby. We would have a certain scheme that she would be able to go back to school, continue her education, possibly even into third level, and she would have funded early years education for her child. That's all gone now because she doesn't actually qualify under NCS.
But so what happens, Leah, just before you continue there, and I don't mean to be rude by interrupting you, but when you said that's gone now, that just did not go. Somebody somewhere with the stroke of a pen made it gone. So where did that decision come from, and who made it, and what criteria did they use to make that decision?
Well, the decision came that they wanted to streamline all the all different funding. So they wanted to streamline all of that funding into one, which is the National Child Care Scheme. So so that person would be entitled to a certain amount under that scheme. But what they did was they made agreements with other government agencies whereby they would sponsor. So in effect, this young mum should be sponsored to be able to get subsidised childcare. She should be sponsored by either the Department of Children or the Department of Education. So she, or if she has a social worker, you know, she should get a letter from them to say, yes, this child needs to be in early years education. But in reality, because that information may have been agreed at a higher level, on the ground, it's not really getting through. And the system is notoriously hard to navigate. So actual application process in itself is very difficult for parents to navigate. So, okay, if you've got a certain level of IT skill, it would still take you a long time to get through the system, but you might get from start to finish. Where what's happening with a lot of our community managers are having to do that on behalf of parents, enter their information on a system which a lot of the time is quite invasive. Like, the information would be very personal information around their family circumstances. They have to sign up for a MyGov ID first, which we all know there's been controversy around before. But in order to get a number on the NCS system, they must have my GovID number. So we have managers who are, you know, speaking to parents who have to, you know, feel like they have to justify why they're not working, why they don't have this money, that money, the other money, where in effect, it's none of anybody's business. Do you know what I mean? But it's creating barriers. We had, anecdotally, I can tell you that we had a mother who dropped into one of our local services and, you know, kind of started the process, started the conversation, and ended up, she had her two-year-old with her. So she had to kind of, like, she just ended up throwing her hands in the air and saying, you know, this is just too stressful for me. I just can't deal with this.
Do you get a feeling, Leah, like me, that this was designed in such a way that it's having the desired effect, that it's just being made too awkward and too complicated and people are going to shy away from it, thus ensuring that, as I said, that this was the desired effect? I mean, what I don't understand... and if you'll excuse me for this, and I might get you to go over in greater detail, they're not asking people why they have X amount of money in their bank account. They're asking people why they don't have X amount of money.
It's not even that. So everybody qualifies for a minimum of 15 hours subsidised childcare, which basically boils down to the earlier service gets paid €5 for each hour that child attends, which is very minimal amount of money as well in comparison to, you know, kind of what it costs, I suppose. But it's around kind of how much are you working. So if you're working a 40-hour week, you are entitled to a lot more on that system than if you're not working. But we know that there are probably 101 reasons why a parent can't work. It's not a choice for some people. For some people, they may have mental health, physical health issues, addiction issues, you know, like a myriad of reasons why a parent can't work. And for those kind of families, it's essential that those children are in early years education. But also we know, like in particular, we're obviously based in Darrendale, we work in the Coolock area, we know what's been going on in this area for a long time in terms of, you know, I mean, we know the shootings have happened. Parents don't feel like they can let their children out to socialise. So we need children to have a safe space they can go to be children, to you know, play with other children. And we know early years education is so important because children learn everything through play. And children need that safe space, an environment where they can play and they can have experience that are kind of engineered and designed to bring on their speech and language development, to bring on their social development. And basically what's happened is we're getting... where those spaces originally were created in our community for children from those type of families, what's happening is they're being excluded because of this scheme. And in place, we're getting families. And we welcome all types of families. It's not that we don't want families. Like, we want there to be a mixture. But what's happening is the places that were designed for children who needed the intervention that early education can provide, those places are now being taken up by working families because, you know, the other families aren't getting the funding. And it's just like we would have families, you know, we obviously have a lot of, you know, members of the travelling community living on sites in the area. And again, a lot of the parents don't feel comfortable allowing their small children out playing on sites because we know that there's a lot of, you know, rat infestation and things like that that's going on for traveller families. And they're really concerned about that. So they don't feel comfortable allowing small children to go out and play. So we have children who are confined to a trailer all day because they aren't entitled to subsidised early years education. So, you know, it's really kind of where we had started to see a change. We had started to see, you know, great gains in terms of, you know, families from disadvantaged backgrounds and getting kind of the investment for early years education. We started to see those changes happening and children really starting school, ready to start school because of early education. It's all kind of starting to fall away again now, and we're really, you know, it's a worry because we know that that early education can break that cycle. We have lots of international research that shows that, you know, for every euro you invest in early education, it actually, what comes into the exchequer when that child is growing up is €7 to €9. So if we can put that money in early years instead of, like, you know, eliminating, saving the money now, potentially you're going to have to put it in three, four, five times more when that child is a teenager.
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers to me, you know, because number one, it's breaking one of the golden rules of if it's not broke, don't fix it. And to me, and I, as you know, Leah, we have spoken countless times about the early years initiative ran by the Northside Partnership. And in fact, just for the benefit of listeners who may not be aware, that model has been copied and pasted into several different organisations around the country. Such is the success of it. And now you have officialdom coming along, turning the whole thing on its head. And the other thing then that strikes me from this, Leah, and I just want to refer back briefly to an interview I did last week in relation to university education and the cost thereof by way of accommodation, and the fact that a lot of people may now not be in the position to go to third level or higher education because of those costs. That's one end of the spectrum. And now you have this directive which is going to affect children from, you know, sort of one up until 5-6 years of age. And to me, what it's going to do is going to permeate down, or I suppose in this case, up, so that the divide again between the haves and the have-nots will be getting bigger. Like, I mean, a child of two children entering school at the age of five, a child who has had the benefit of this as opposed to a child who was barred from it, the difference between them will be immense at that stage.
Definitely, definitely. And that's, I mean, in the letter that we've written, we do kind of, like, we feel that children from marginalised backgrounds are basically being discriminated against, because what's happened is, you know, if you've got a two parents who work, or even one parent who works, you're getting much more investment. So basically what it feels like, it's about political gain, it's about pacifying people who vote. Do you know what I mean? And it's not thinking about, like, we know, and it's sad, it's so sad, it's awful, but we know, like, if you look at the statistics for the Northside Partnership area, we know we've had to invest money in supporting, you know, individuals to go to third level education, because we have something like a 14 to 17% rate of young people going to college here in our area, where around the country it's probably, you know, 4 to 5 times that. So we know that this is making the difference. We know this is how, like, children are being born on a back foot because of where they live, and that's basically what it boils down to. But we know we can make that difference by investing the money here and now. It also, what I haven't mentioned is also school-age childcare, which is really important as well. So again, like, you have families who may be, you know, attending college, or, you know, maybe on working schemes and stuff like that. So they should be entitled, and would have on previous funding schemes, been entitled to childcare for their children after school. Again, which makes a huge big difference, because, as I said, children can't go out and play in certain areas. It's not a safe space to be. Maybe you've got a family who are speaking English as a second language. So if they attend school-age childcare, they have the support of the educators there. They can help them with their homework. They can give them a space to stay safe, play, be with their peers, you know, enjoy things they mightn't necessarily have the opportunity to enjoy at home. We also, you know, they'd get meals and things like that. All of this would have been provided for while they were in a school-age service. Again, this is all the funding for this has been withdrawn. And it's not just the Northside Partnership and Preparing for Life area. It's around the country. And we're part of an area-based childhood scheme, and that's kind of area-based childhood project, sorry. And that's that we have like 13 of those around the country. And every single person who does the equivalent of my job in each of those has been going through the same thing. And it's discrimination, basically, we feel like, when it boils down to it, because it's again, as you said, it's giving people who have money more money, and people who haven't. And I don't disagree with, you know, subsidised childcare, and I agree with all of that. It's very, very expensive, but we do need to be investing more in families who are marginalised. It just is it's what makes a difference. And like the earlier services here, the community-based earlier services here, it's not just bring your child in and we look after them. They do so much more. We have links within the community. We can make referrals. We can help, you know, maybe referrals to speech and language therapists that might be working with social workers, or we have family support. It's just so much more than simply just caring for a child for 3 hours a day.
Leah, in order to get this ludicrous decision reversed, how do you go about it, or how do you plan to go about it, or can it be done?
Well, I mean, there's been numerous articles in the papers over the past kind of month. What we're doing is we've made a couple of suggestions, even looking at similar models from around the world. Sorry, like we have interventions even in the UK called Sure Start, and they have children's centres where they kind of invest. It's a certain, like what we're asking for is a yearly investment. We can't, like there's kind of a lot more involved in just this scheme. There's an administration burden on managers as well. So they have to do weekly returns. They're getting paid hourly rates for children. They do weekly returns. If a child is continuously missing, so say a parent decides, actually, I'm going to pick my child up. I'm off on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm going to pick my child up on a Tuesday afternoon and bring them home. Well, then what happens is the earlier service gets kind of that money comes off their funding. And, you know, there's no, like, who's going to want to bring their child? Who's going to take a space of a child for 3 hours on a Tuesday? So that money, the earlier service has to take the hit for that money. And we're constantly being kind of having to pick up the slack, I suppose, financially for mistakes that are being made with the online scheme. And there's so much more kind of involved. So what we're asking for is that we kind of in early years get a yearly grant based off of the child, and that there's no kind of returns to be done weekly. We don't have to worry about whether our funding's going to change week to week. We know this is what we have for the year, basically the same as a school. I mean, you wouldn't see a school having to do weekly returns, or you wouldn't see them docked money because a child has been sick from school, you know, for a couple of weeks or whatever. It would never happen. And that's kind of where I think the piece is missing, because we're not recognised in the same capacity a school is recognised when we should be. We have that in the letter as well. Like, you know, a lot of us have spent thousands and thousands, and maybe for more educated than teachers are in some instances, and we're just not given the recognition that schools get. So what we're asking for is similar to like the DESH model in the schools, where schools in certain areas get a certain amount of money extra, and they get extra resources so that they can provide the support for those children. That's what we're asking for as well. It's a similar model where recognition of the service that we provide, it's not simply just minding children. It's an intervention, and we need the support of the government to say, yeah, you have this amount of money for the year to do what you need to do to help these children.
I'm just reading, I'll give you a couple of official government departments, and this may put the stupidity of this in context for you. The Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, or the Department of Social Protection. There's two government departments, right? Now, number one, I do not see how this is looking after the development of children. I fail to see the inequality. And I fail to see how a child with disability can be helped by this. I don't see, and Liam mentioned that they're travellers, I don't see how this is going to help integrate traveller children into society properly. And the Department of Social Protection, I don't see any protection here for the vulnerable in our society. Personal opinion, I may be wrong, personal opinion. I will preface it by saying that. Leah, I would imagine that somewhere there has to be pressure brought to bear on the powers that be.
Well, we hope so. We know that a representative from one of the early years organisations, the ACP, they're called. We have a representative from there meeting in Oireachtas, I think tomorrow, to discuss the issues. We've had roundtable conversations, we've had meetings, we've had consultations. Managers from our area have met with Minister Sapone over the years. There was consultations happening. We've no reports from those consultations. There's nothing available. Apparently the information wasn't compiled. We don't know what's happened as a result of all of this. Where we're standing now, where we're at, is a lot of the earlier services have been financially viable because of the investment from the COVID payments. So the wage subsidies coming in from COVID were kind of keeping everybody afloat. That's running out this week. And we have, families that are engaging in education who maybe the funding hasn't yet kicked in. Again, it's to do with the online system and how it works and getting GovID numbers and all of that stuff. So what we've got is we've got earlier services either have children in while this process happens, or they hold a place for that child until the paperwork is done. Again, that funding, they don't backdate funding ever. So that could take 6 weeks, it could take 2 days, it could take 10 weeks. For that amount of time, there's no funding for the service. Where that would have been okay over the last few months, or years even, because of COVID payments, we're seeing now that actually this is going to start impacting. We have services who probably are losing thousands and thousands as a result of this and may be threatening closure. Again, the service they provide in the area is invaluable. Some of them aren't going to be viable by the end of the year financially.
Leah, do you think that officialdom, and when I say officialdom here, I'm talking about the various government departments that you would be dealing with, that they look upon you as just a glorified babysitting service?
Yeah, I do. Now, that's kind of the people who make the decisions. I think it's, like, I've worked in government departments. I worked for an organisation called Better Start, who are government funded. So I know, there are people there who value it. But I think what's happening is when these kind of schemes are designed, although they have a consultation with early years educators, it's kind of tokenistic and they're not taken on board what people are saying. They don't recognise the value of what we do and the intricacies of it and how we support families. And I also think that, people who are doing all of this are at a certain level. They're kind of on a pedestal. They're very far removed from real life on the ground, living in a community like ours. And they just don't understand, when someone says they're not working, but why aren't you working? There's loads of jobs out there. But there's, as I said, a myriad of reasons why a family, don't have an income or a person working. And that might simply be because, you're a one-parent family. You have to stay at home and mind your child because you can't get a job. Do you know what I mean? Who's going to look after those kids? So you have to kind of think about it in that way as well. I do feel like we have kind of a certain level of, people are at a certain level and they just don't understand or realise what real life is like for many people.
Leah Russell, from the early years programme coordinator there with the Preparing for Life team at the Northside Partnership. Leah, thank you so much for joining me and being so givish of your time this morning.
And can I just ask if anybody, we're sharing the open letter this afternoon on social media. We're going to tag Roderick O'Gorman and Northside Partnership and everybody. If I could ask people to share and just to kind of get a bit of traction behind it. We're not the only people who are doing this, but we're just hoping that people can kind of share. We have a Facebook page. It's Preparing for Life Early Years Education. We'll have it up there as well. Also, outside the Dáil tomorrow, we will be presenting a couple of letters. There's a few different communities coming together, and we'll be presenting letters to the minister tomorrow at about 11 o'clock. I think we're protesting there as well. So just to kind of get as much support and as many people behind us as we can, because it's really, really important.
And just to add to that, this interview along with the other ones today will be up on our podcast service, the Near FM Listen Again. So just log on to Near FM, click the Listen Again button. This interview will be there, and the web link that Leah referred to will be there for you we would encourage everybody listening this morning to get on board with this, because this is something that affects your community where you live, and it can only be beneficial to your community and the children and the families in it to support this cause. Leah, thank you so much again for joining me. Thank you on behalf of the listeners for all the work you're doing. And again, a huge thanks to Sarah Classy for organising this from the Northside Partnership for me this morning. Leah, we will be keeping a firm eye on this. Until we talk again, take care. Bye-bye.
Brilliant. Thanks, Donny. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
90.3.
This is Near FM.